Are you fed up with the corporate bullshit holding you back? Welcome to Invest in Yourself, the digital entrepreneur podcast, the ultimate launchpad for those ready to seize control and unleash their creative genius as entrepreneurs. Hosted by Phil Better, the podcast mogul. Each episode, he's sharing inspiring success stories from the digital entrepreneurs who took the risk and invested in themselves. This is your call to arms. Invest in yourself, break free from someone else's rules, and build the empire you deserve. Now let's dive headfirst into today's explosive episode.
Welcome to Invest in Yourself, the Digital Entrepreneur Podcast, the go-to show for professionals who are looking to stop playing small and get ready to build digital businesses with real impact. I'm, of course, your host, Phil Better, the podcast mogul, and today's guest is a marketing mind you definitely want to learn from, especially if you're tired of chasing clicks and want to start building true trust and traction. He's been in the game since the dial-up days. Seriously. But don't let the AOL nostalgia fool you. He's the CEO of Connectco. He spent the last 17 plus years helping over 400 startups and small businesses across 20 countries grow their brand with a mix of sharp strategy and behavioral science. Whether he's leading campaigns, teaching final year MBA students, or riffing badly on jazz pianos, his approach is all about clarity, connection, and cutting through the noise in a world that is overloaded with it. So if you're building a brand, scaling a business, or just trying to make smarter moves in your marketing, this episode's going to be full of gold. So stick around, because just in a few seconds, you'll meet the marketing expert, educator, and the CEO, G. Rana Sinha. G, thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation, Phil. Delighted to be invited, as they say.
So we're going to jump straight into it. Gee, why did you decide to go into the world of entrepreneurship back when it was still dial-up modem life?
Very simple. I used to sit on the other side of the table. I used to be a CMO for a software company, selling into the print and publishing world. So clients were people like Nestle, Time Magazine, Boeing, big IKEA, big names. So I'd reached a sort of a ceiling really within the organization. It was growing at a certain pace, but was going through some growing pains. And I was looking around, and all the time, whenever I used to invite marketing agencies to come and, you know, pitch for the business, they always used to come up with these grand presentations and, you know, wonderful slide decks, and they, you know, bore you to tears with their vocabulary and buzzwords and all the rest of it. But none of them would take any sort of kind of fiduciary responsibility on the actual outcome, the business result that the marketing plan was supposed to deliver upon, okay? Which I thought was a little bit bonkers, to be honest, because, you know, you can come up with all of this stuff, but at the end of the day, somebody needs to be held responsible. And, you know, you can't just wave a wet finger in the air and sort of say, okay, I'll go with these guys because, you know, I like the people, or the, you know, their shoes were especially highly polished that morning, or, you know, I was just listening to the inner voice or some other nonsense. Okay. So this was all at a perfect storm, really, where the iPhone had just been launched. Okay. Broadband was becoming affordable to mere mortals. Okay. If you like, not just sort of the big guys. And it was a time where the larger organizations around the world, the multinationals, were leveraging the power of what online was going to be faster than obviously everybody else, because they had, you know, deeper pockets and greater resources and all the rest of it. And so I thought, well, hang on a minute, because small businesses are missing out here. Right. unless we're very careful, and you know, it turned out to be the case, the online experience for the average customer was being dictated by the biggest brands in the world because of their reach. And so even small to medium-sized businesses were going to be judged, consciously or unconsciously, by the customer experience that a buyer had from a large organization. So it occurred to me that we needed to get resources, affordable resources, into the hands of small business owners as quickly as possible before they were sort of cut out of the equation and they had too much to catch up on, if you like. Okay. And that's really how Kexino, which is how it's pronounced.
I apologize.
That's how Kexino was born. Okay. Initially, there were three of us, me in northeastern France, one person in just south of London, and another person just east of Boston, Massachusetts. And that was the beginning of 2008. So 17 and a half years later, we're now 19 people in 9 countries. 9 of us are in the US. The rest are in Europe, South Africa, Japan, and I have 2 people in Australia. 80% of our clients are based in the US. Well, actually, North America, let's say. The rest are, in total, we serve around 20 clients in about 20 countries. But primarily, we serve North America more than anyone else. And that's how I sort of got into entrepreneurship my first time round. This is my third gig, if you like, starting a business. I started a post-production company many years ago, working with advertising agencies and corporates. And then we started a content localization agency about 10 years ago, just after Kexino was born, actually. And I exited that about 5.5 years ago. And Kexino, as I said, has been going for just over 17 years.
Right. With what you do at Kexino, what is some of the most common marketing mistakes? Because you're dealing with marketing, you're helping businesses market their properly to their ideal clients, creating the strategies behind it. What are some of the mistakes that the small to medium sized businesses make when it comes to their marketing strategy or just marketing in general?
Okay, firstly, I think we shouldn't conflate strategy with tactics. 99% of business owners, when they talk about marketing, they actually mean promotion. They don't talk about marketing because they don't know what marketing is, which is fine, right? You're not necessarily need to know what marketing is. And if you've not been experienced or educated in marketing, you can be forgiven for thinking marketing is X when actually marketing is Y. That's fine. But most people, when they talk about marketing, they're actually talking about promotion. They're talking about the tactical execution. So they're talking about websites and videos and social media and ads and podcasts and videos and goodness knows whatever else, right? Which is all very well and good and, you know, certainly very important. But before we do any of that shit, okay, we need to go further upstream and actually understand the basics of marketing. Why are we doing all of this? Okay. Why are we doing any of this? The reason why we're doing any of this is to get in the head of our potential buyer so that when they're in, and when they're ready to buy, when they are what we'd call in market, and they're thinking of the category where our product or service lives, they think about us as well as the other 3, 5, 7 other, you know, competitors. It's always an odd number, by the way. It's just how the brain works. It's always an odd number. It's just like whenever you put bullet points, you should always put bullet points in odd numbers, 3, 5, 7. You should never do even numbers for bullet points because it's just the way the brain works. But we can get onto that later if you want. So all we can do is come to mind when a buyer is in market, is ready to buy. That is the objective of marketing. And to close more business than our competitors by either stealing market share or stealing the greater growth of the category that we're in within whatever industry we're in. So you can think about it as like SEO for your brain. Okay. I'm a buyer and I want to buy X and I'm going to buy X today. And, you know, your particular brand comes to mind as well as, you know, the industry leader and, you know, a couple of other competitors, but that's all marketing can ever do. Okay. So to answer those questions is not an executional solution. It's not about more Instagram or more videos or more, you know, LinkedIn posts or whatever else. Okay. It's a lot more strategic. It's a lot more about objectives. It's a lot more about things like customer research, segmentation, targeting, positioning, qual, quant, orientation, all of this stuff that goes, that is under the waterline that most people who are not in marketing, I call them civilians, right? Those people don't know that even happens within marketing, and nor should they. I mean, there's no point, right? You know, it's just like, I don't know what an accountant does for, you know, 99% of the time. Pivot tables in Excel. I don't know what they are.
But they do, they stuff, do add it. They add, right? Stuff together. That's
stuff. Okay. Yeah. I mean, all of that sum, you know, I'm the one who sort of tries to type in some Excel sum equals this and it always comes up error. I haven't got a fucking clue what's going on there. Right. But it doesn't matter because I know somebody who knows that crap. And I can throw stuff at them and they throw stuff back at me in a language that I can understand. And, you know, all's happy in the world, right? It's all good. And that's the point. Most people who, there's two problems. Number one, we're hiring the wrong people for marketing roles because we think marketing is the tactical stuff.
Yeah.
Right? You know, pretty pictures, drop shadows, AI, you know, prompts. Okay. And so that's one problem. The other problem is the people who we're hiring, the people who have marketing in their job title, haven't got a frigging clue what marketing is either. And they think marketing is
pretty pictures, prompts,
social, right, insert, you know, tactic of the month here. Okay. The problem here is we're a ship without a rudder. We have no frigging idea where we're going because there's been no objective been set. We don't know what our ideal customer profile looks like. We don't know enough about what motivates buyers to buy from us, well, buy from the category, let alone buy from us, to be able to shape the communication in a way that resonates in their mind and is sticky enough so that they can recall us when they are in a position to buy. Okay?
Yeah. I love it because...
You've gone very quiet, Phil, and I don't know why. I'm getting very worried.
You don't have to be worried. You're dropping...
Do I need to call an ambulance?
No, we're good. We're good. We don't have to call 911 or 411 or 999. I think it's in England. I don't know what it is.
No, I'm in France. I'm not. Oh. I'm not in. I know. I don't sound very French, but no, I'm in northeastern France.
Ooh, close to Normandy by any chance?
I'm sorry.
Close to Normandy.
No, about 800 miles away from Normandy, actually.
A little far.
Right on the other side. It's probably as far east as you can go before you start talking German. very far away from Normandy. It's a town called Strasbourg, which is about the size of Boston, a little bit smaller than Boston.
But I love what you were saying, that because I see it all the time when I'm in the podcasting world, so I see a lot of people like, how do I market?
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Who would have thought a guy on a podcast would be in the podcasting business?
Yeah, come on.
And a lot of people are like, oh, how do I, you know, grow my audience or get more downloads for the podcast? And a lot of people are just saying, oh, you need to post more. You need to put more videos out. And I'm like, that's not it. Like, you have to know who are you going after? Like, who is the individual, the one person you want to listen to your podcast? And I keep getting so many people, no, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. And I'm like, I've talked to a couple marketing people who actually run marketing companies successfully. They're telling me to find their ideal client. And I'm like, your podcast is a business. Treat it like a business. So follow the marketing people that know what they're doing, because that's what it is. Your podcast is a business. Each episode is a product that you want someone to buy, i.e. download. And what you just said is like, I just want to clip that and just post it in so many Facebook groups for podcasters, because I'm like, look, this dude has been in the game for 17 plus years, helped hundreds of businesses, thousands of businesses, create the proper marketing strategy and not just rely on the technical, the tactic of the week, as you said. So I love that you dropped that, and I was just like in awe listening to you. And also, your voice is very smooth, so it's just, it can lull you into yes. So I can understand why you.
I could tell you anything. I could read the phone book, couldn't I?
Probably, yes. You could. Shit. I would be like, amazing. Yeah,
for younger listeners, you have to ask an elder person what a phone book is.
Luckily, I'm an elder millennial, so I still remember what the yellow pages and the white pages are, and a phone booth is. With everything you teach marketing to final year MBAs, I'm curious, was that something that grew out of starting your own marketing agency, or was that something that has always been interesting to you and something you've always wanted to do?
No, absolutely not. It was a friend of mine, Caroline is her name, who is in education. And we used to meet up for lunch now and again, just to shoot the breeze and complain and, you know, just say how crap the world is, basically. And she called me up one time and she said, look, I'm teaching at this business school and they want to have a class and I think you'd be absolutely perfect for it. Are you up for it? I said, and you're joking. I can't teach. I can't string a couple of sentences together. You've got to be joking. She said, listen, I really think you'd be good, because even back in the day when you were a marketing director, whenever we used to get interns coming in to our department, you know, they'd be there for 2 or 3 months. Okay. I couldn't give these people anything useful to do. Right. And they were, you know, final year marketing grad students, right? I mean, they could talk about blue ocean strategy and all of this fucking shit as long as you are. But you couldn't give them anything to do. They were what I would call educated fools. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, my dad used to say the MBAs, right. He had to reteach them when they would come into the insurance. They're just full of knowledge.
You have to unteach these people, right? Okay. So you have to give them like losers jobs, like database cleaning and crap, you know, the stuff that you give AI to do today, right? You couldn't give them anything to do. So Caroline said, look, you're always complaining that the people you're getting are as useful as a chocolate ashtray, right? In which case, right? Do you want to continue being part of the problem, or do you want to actually get off your ass and do something about it? So, okay. So we went down and we saw the dean, okay? And dean said, look, let's do it first semester, okay? See how you feel. I'll see how the class feels. And worst case scenario, you know, we've wasted a semester, you've wasted a semester, and, you know, that's the end of it. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. And you know what, Phil, I fell in love with it. I mean, I just absolutely loved the whole thing about it. I mean, firstly, while there was some vague idea of a curriculum, I could basically talk about anything I friggin' wanted, okay? Because anything that I was saying was going to be better than what these guys have had from people who do this stuff for a living, because you have this whole academia bubble thing going on, right? So the minute you become for a full-time academic, that's when your life stops. Time stops, right?
Yeah.
And any relevance to whatever subject you're talking about instantly dates from that time onwards, because you're no longer part of the real world, okay? So for me, being able to say, look, the reason why I'm doing this is because I want you guys to be fit for purpose when you go out and into the real world and get a job, because I don't want you to be doing database cleaning. I want you to think, because that's why you will be employed. And so we used to have discussions, sometimes arguments, right, about certain things. And, you know, I learned as much as I think my students learned in those early days. Understanding how 25-year-olds think, okay, which is not something not something I ever do otherwise, officer, honestly, right? Don't go anywhere near them, right? So it was great. It was a great eye opener, and they absolutely loved it. And seriously, I still get emails, direct text messages, sometimes phone calls from students I taught 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Okay, just wanting to catch up, shoot the breeze. When are you in town next? Let's go for a beer. That sort of stuff. I mean, how many times does that happen in any other sort of tertiary education example? It doesn't happen, right? I used to get emails from students like a couple of years after they left and said, "Do you still have the handouts for the lesson you gave about, you know, this particular subject? Because I'm having an argument with my boss, and I want to use your slides to actually tell him or her that him or her is they're full of shit." I said, "Well, no, I don't have them anymore. I don't keep the stuff from 3 years ago. You'd be joking. Plus, you know, every year, 40-50% of the presentations change, right? Because stuff changes." So that whole thing, that whole environment, you know, getting people who want to learn about this sort of stuff, who've never had it taught to them in a real world, tangible, workplace centric way, as well as me using it from a cathartic side of things to vent, if you like, right? To get this all of, it's like free therapy for both of us, right? It's just great. Absolutely loved it. So no, it was a happy accident.
I love that.
I didn't set out to go into that direction. And you know, if the pay didn't suck, I'd probably do more of it.
But, downside, yeah, of education.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, what can I tell you?
With your 17 plus years being the CEO of this great marketing agency and helping and teaching the future to stop being, you know, more knowledge based and have some actual real world experience, what is it that you do maybe on a regular basis to invest in yourself, to keep yourself ahead of the curve or knowing what's coming down so that you can be the best version of yourself?
For myself or for our clients? Because that's two different questions. Ooh. I mean, for our clients, I'll let you into a secret, Phil. Doesn't actually matter, because the only thing that you need to do is satisfy one person. And that person is the person who pays all our salaries. And that person is a customer. And the customer is way, 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 way behind any possible curve that you and I are looking at when we're looking at developments in small business, in commerce, in marketing, in sales, in all of this stuff. Customers aren't thinking about all that shit, okay? Everybody's jumping up and down about how everybody's using AI for search, okay? Google still has 90% of the search market. Yes, it's dropping, but it's still 90%, okay? Most customers can't even spell ChatGPT, let alone use it. Okay? Do you like that?
I love it.
Okay?
Oh.
They're not thinking about that. It's only us in this little friggin' bubble that we're in, okay? Now, of course, there are certain industries, certain categories, which are ahead of the technological curve than others. Of course there are, especially in, you know, anything vaguely to do with tech. Absolutely. But we don't need to be at the bleeding edge, because the bleeding edge is a very dangerous place to be, right? As they say, okay, the early bird may catch the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese, right? So we don't want to be bleeding edge, because bleeding edge is scary. And many customers, dare I say most customers, don't want to be at the bleeding edge. They don't want to be the first person trying X, Y, and Z, okay? There is a thing by Geoffrey Moore, and Malcolm Gladwell wrote about it as well. It's called the law of diffusion of innovations, which is just basically how it's a bell curve about how different segments of customers choose to buy stuff. And you have the early adopters, which is around about 12.5% of the market, the people who need to be first with a particular innovation or product, okay? Back in the old days, it was the idiots who used to queue up at 5 o'clock in the morning to buy the new iPhone at the Apple store, okay, before they knew about the internet. Those sort of people who just wanted to be first, okay? But that's a tiny percentage of the available market who actually buy stuff. Most people are looking for some kind of social proof before they start making a decision. So they need to see that somebody else has bought it before they move further forward, right? So all we need to do is exceed their expectations in terms of discovery and buying experience within that category. And that category, the experience is being set by the category. It's being set by our competitors. It's not being set by a Google or AI or Amazon or anybody else, okay? It's being set by the expectations of our customer, of our buyer. So as long as we exceed upon a metric that they see as being valuable and somewhat measurable, happy days. We're laughing all the way to the bank. It's very easy to get caught up in all this tech and all the rest of it, but 90% of customers in 90% of industries don't give a flying fuck about all that stuff. They really don't. They've got a particular problem that they want to go away, and they're looking for a solution to that problem. And if we can communicate the problem, not the solution, the problem, in a way that they can identify with, and we can brand it in a way that they can find some kind of affinity into our particular brand position, then more than half of the struggle is gone. We're more than halfway there. Because people don't think about brands and tech and all that stuff in the way that you and I do. Because they've got lives. They're not sad mofos like us, okay? They're doing other things.
Oh, the truth hurts.
It's like putting your head in a bowl of ice water, isn't it? It's just like, oh, crap. Yes. Yeah. Okay. You're right. And that's how people look at this stuff, right? People, they're not looking with a magnifying glass at all of the stuff that we're doing, because life's too short and they've got other stuff that's far more pressing.
Yeah, their wife, their kids, you know, the car's just broken, the house mortgage exactly. needs to pay. There's 100 other fish, things.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. Yeah, they've got 101 other things on their mind. And we are at the bottom of the list. You know, half the time, the best we can hope for is disinterest, you know?
It's true. Gee, we are coming to the end of the episode, and I feel like we could be probably here for another 2 hours, or I feel like a 4-hour lecture of yours, which I would sit through probably 5 of them in a row, because I'm going to learn so much from you, because you do have that real world experience when it comes to marketing, which we need a lot more. And you're higher up than the bottom of my list in problems that I need solved. But I want to go back to 10-year-old G. Is still wandering around, looking at the world with bright eyes and has different problems in his life. What is a piece of advice you would love to hand back to your 10-year-old self that could not simplify their life, but give them some ease, if you will?
Firstly, we're all still 10 years old inside ourselves, Bill, okay? All right, you know, we have this outer shell, which ages. But I still think of myself as about 10, maybe up to about 14, but certainly not more than that. All right. So, you know, I think that the day we think we're older than 10 is the day we die. All right. But more than that, the words of advice that I would give is very simple. And I would give the same advice to any person who's looking to start their own business, small business, side hustle, whatever, any business that serves customers, which is pretty much any business, right? And it goes the following: do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it. That's it, right? So if I tell you I'm going to send you a proposal by Friday at 10:30 in the morning, you move heaven and earth to make sure that that is delivered to the customer Friday at 10:30. Not 10:35, not 11 o'clock, not 3 p.m., and certainly not Monday at 11:26, right? Just do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it. Sounds easy, right?
Uh-huh.
But in my experience, and I'll wager in your experience, probably 80% of the interactions we have with businesses fail on that one arbiter of performance. And all I'm asking you is to do what the freaking hell they said you were going to do. So if you can just do that, you are already in the top 20% of every business on the planet. Just imagine that. Just imagine that.
That's insane.
But we don't do that. And I don't understand why. It's so easy. You know, in the old days, we used to call it, you know, integrity, or we have to call it authenticity, or rename stuff, right? Because we have to rename stuff, because otherwise, stuff that's been around forever and ever, because otherwise millennials wouldn't look at it anymore. I have to give it a rebrand before we start looking at stuff again. But stuff's been around forever, okay? It's just basic honesty, truthfulness, authenticity, or integrity. It's just how you choose to be treated yourself if you were sitting on the other side of the table. It's not rocket science, is it, really? We're not talking about quantum mechanics here. Okay, it's pretty darn simple stuff, but so many businesses fail at this simple, simple task.
Gee, that's
all I got.
That is perfect advice. And the first time I've been given that advice on this podcast, and I love it. It's just being true to your word. It's basically all you have in this world is your word. And if you're not true to your word, what are you going to do? Right? That's what businesses need to be. If you're saying you're going to do something, do it, and do it with a smile on your face, even if you hate it. But I think that is some great advice, not only for, and I love how you said, most of us are between 10 and 14, regardless of how old our exterior be. And I have to agree with you. I think I still believe I'm a silly 11-year-old boy who has no idea what's going on, even though I'm closing.
Listen, you still laugh at fart jokes, don't you?
All the time. Fart and poop jokes are the best types of jokes.
Right, exactly. So I rest my case, Your Honor. I have nothing else to say.
I'm pretty sure you do have more to say, but we are coming to the end of the episode. There's
far more to say, unfortunately, yes.
I'm going to jump off stage here, G. I want you to let my audience know where they can connect with you, where they can find you, follow you for more wisdom, because I know you have tons of wisdom from your last 17 plus years of being in this industry. So the floor, sir, is yours once again.
Well, the best way to get hold of me is, or the fastest way to get hold of me is on LinkedIn. To be honest, would you believe that there is only one G. Ranasinghe on LinkedIn? Can you imagine? It's amazing, isn't it? So you can find me on LinkedIn mostly. I post twice a week. I post 30-second, 1-minute videos about the sort of stuff that we talked about today, or stuff that's just pissed me off that week, or various other things. But you know, people seem to like it. You can find me there, or obviously you find me at the Kexino website, which is kexino.com. Simple as that.
I love it. Gee, I want to thank you so much for being here. It was an absolute pleasure having you on, and I'm definitely going to be re-inviting you on so that we can go deeper into the behavioral science behind marketing and more of your great advice that you have here. So thank you again, sir.
I'd love to do it. I'd look forward to coming back. Absolutely.
Amazing. To my audience, make sure you check out the show notes down below to connect with G so that you can learn more from him and hear some of his rants over on LinkedIn. And when you're ready to monetize your podcast, make sure you reach out to me, the podcast mogul, and I'll be more than happy to help you there. As always, remember to invest in yourself.
That's today's episode. Thank you for listening to the stories, tips, and the golden nuggets our guests shared. Pick up the Podcast Mogul's Guide to Podcasting by clicking the link in the show notes below. Always remember to invest in yourself to become the best version of yourself.